is the Peoria Reads Don't Shoot Roundtable on 89.9 WCBU. I'm Peoria Public Radio News Director Tanya Kuntz. This is the final show in our four-part series. We're talking about David Kennedy's book, Don't Shoot, and the Peoria Initiative. Today, author David Kennedy joins us on the show. But first, the roundtable panel talks about the final chapters of the book as it relates to violent crime in Peoria. The panel is comprised of Peoria Mayor Jim Artis, Peoria County State's Attorney Jerry Brady, U.S. Attorney Jim Lewis, Peoria Police Chief Steve Settingsguard, and Peoria County Sheriff Mike McCoy. Peoria Mayor Jim Artis.
This is the fourth and final in our series of panel discussions of David Kennedy's book, Don't Shoot. We're discussing the book as part of the Peoria Public Library and Common Places Peoria Reads program. You can also find out more about the initiative at our website, don'tshootpeoria.com. And it includes information about the book and the real-life stories of those who've fallen victim to gun violence in Peoria. Now, we're going to talk about the last three chapters of David Kennedy's book, and Police Chief Steve Settingsguard is with us. And we'll discuss the first of the three chapters, the first chapter is titled Stopping It. Chief?
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, that chapter opens with a really chilling and I think dark and somewhat depressing description of what urban violence looks like in America today. And it's a pretty moving chapter and probably the most impactful, at least from my perspective. But the good story is it didn't end there, and it follows up with that dark picture, and it says that we know how to stop that insanity, and it says we know what works. And the thing that works is focused deterrence. David writes that, and he quotes, cut the killing dramatically. They get rid of the public drug craziness. They keep people out of jail and prison. They repair things between the police and the community. They work right now and today. And David points out the strategy is a long track record in city after city. So we're not inventing something here. We're trying to model ourselves after those that have already led the way and found success. So why are we, a question may come up, why aren't we all doing this? And unfortunately, the answer is not a pleasant one, and it's one that many of us don't want to hear. And we all have these ideas about what causes gun violence, and there's no shortage of ideas, from racism to poverty to drugs to a lack of education to a lack of moral upbringing, that the laws are too lenient or the laws are too draconian. You name it, everyone has an explanation for what causes the gun violence. Everyone wants to fix it by working on those root causes. But those root causes are so big that, quite frankly, how do you tackle those? And for a group like ours, in a community like ours, are we going to solve all of those root causes? So the author, David Kennedy, says we need strategies to fix the problem instead of fixating on the root causes. If you diagnose someone with lung cancer and the doctors go back and try and reverse all the years that you smoke? No, they don't. They fix the lung cancer as it exists today, possible surgery, other treatment. In other words, if a light bulb burns out in a room today, you could spend hours, days, weeks longer trying to figure out the root cause of darkness. And maybe somebody at GE Labs is doing that, and that's worthwhile work. But at the same time, you have to put a new light bulb in. So you got to fix that problem that you're facing today. Same thing with gun violence. I think we need to stop arguing about the root causes, especially at our level. We can't fix those root causes, but we can do something about the gun violence on our streets today. So that's a chapter in a nutshell, but it doesn't even scratch the surface of what's in there. It's a very important chapter. It's vital that we all understand what David is saying here. If we hope to make a change, if you have the book and you have not had time to read it, now it's time to pick that book up and read it, and go to that chapter. Make sure you get at least that chapter. The chapter is called Stopping It Again. It's on page 207, and it's one thing to hear us talk about it. It's another to get the words right from the author's mouth. So I encourage everyone to please go read it.
Thanks, Chief. One question that people in the community are paying attention to the news and seeing the violence continuing, shootings. We had another murder last week. We even had one of our police officers that was shot at. And so a lot of people are talking about and saying, well, why isn't it working now? We all know what the answer to that is, but for those that may be asking the same question, can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, I guess the short answer is we haven't really rolled out or fully implemented this yet. We're kind of at the infancy stages, and not only are we at the point where we're just trying to spread this word among the community, we're still learning things ourselves. And you know, this week that we're spending with David Kennedy has been invaluable. You know, we've had an opportunity now to pick his brain, and we'll continue to do that. So we're on the beginning stage, and this is going to take months of collaboration with other agencies, and for us to continue to build this project and build this team, and bring others on board. So also remember that it's not like we're sitting here waiting and doing nothing. At the same time, we've done some other things to curb the violence. The Don't Shoot team, the task force that we put on the street that has cut the violence. But again, we've talked about this once before, I believe, that the Don't Shoot team cuts the violence now while we're on the street and while we're present. But, you know, when we cut those numbers back, when we go back to normal operation, I don't know what the long-standing impact is. And the program, the Don't Shoot program that we're working on, is more of a long-term solution for us.
You know, the other thing that happened early on in the summer was our state's attorney, Jerry Brady, got together with the U.S. Attorney's Office, State Chambers, and Jim Lewis, and the Peoria Police and others to work on the Most Violent Offender Program. And under that program, you've already taken several violent gang members off the streets, Mr. State's Attorney.
Thanks, Mayor. Yes, we have. And I think the partnership between the U.S. Attorney's Office and our office has been extremely helpful in that regard. We are able on a weekly basis to determine the status of those most violent offenders, and we focus on them on a weekly basis, determining what's happened, where they are, what crimes they've committed. And then just last Monday, we were going through the list, and I noticed we had, fortunately, we were able to retype the list, removing some of those individuals that have been arrested.
And as a matter of fact, the suspect that actually fired at one of your police officers was already on that list. Is that right?
That's correct. And we were able within several days, we were able to, with the benefit of good police work, we were able to identify that individual, arrest that individual, and he was indicted within days.
So, I mean, that's just an example of the emphasis that is going to evidence is that we're going to place a real strong amount of attention and focus on the folks that are using guns to commit crime. And it was important that it was against a police officer, but because of the nature and the severity of the act, that's the response that we can expect to see from your office.
And hopefully,
right?
That message was sent, that it was an immediate indictment, that it was done within days.
I think both as an elected official, but also just as a citizen of Peoria, that's one of the things that people are looking to see. And we've talked about this on the previous three programs, is discussing Mr. Kennedy's book. But you know, one of the unique aspects of this is that your office and the U.S. Attorney's Office are coordinated and working very closely along with the law enforcement agencies, which is something that hasn't happened in Peoria for a long time. So it's good to see that cooperation. So let's move along to the next chapter called Cincinnati. Sheriff McCoy, can you walk us through that chapter?
I can, Mayor. Thank you. You know, the chapter tells a story about the challenges that David Kennedy and those working with him faced when they implemented the Focus Deterrence Program in Cincinnati. The chapter opens with a description of the violence in Boston after they stopped using the strategy, and why the infighting between the good guys prevented them from fixing the problems. You know, when you talk about the infighting with the good guys, I think we've mentioned in the earlier programs that's something that we've managed to sidestep by our preparation, our 6 or 7 months of meeting with all of us together, being on the same page. And I'm glad to see that that's not going to be a problem here. And then the chapter moves to Cincinnati. You know, in Cincinnati, David faced some of the hurdles he has seen numerous times before. They're pretty simple. You know, police that don't believe the strategy will work because it's just going to be another program. And the people in the community that said it won't work here because our crime and our criminals are different, which they're not. But David also found a lot of enthusiasm and goodwill and a group of people who are willing to go out on a limb and give their strategy, give it their all, and really dig in and make it work. Chapter tells the story of preparing for the implementation of the strategy, how David met and worked with the police, how he called the community leaders together, how together the community leaders and the police formed a plan. And then the chapter takes us to what they call in when their strategy is implemented. We hear what the police say, we hear what the community has to say, and how the offenders, the real bad guys, how they react. You know, in one of the communities that spoke up was a surgeon from the children's hospital. And when you read in the book, he told that the people called in, you can feel his desire for ending the violence because of the people he talked in, for stopping the flow of children with gunshot wounds into his hospital. It was something you could just read that this man had a real passion to make this end. It was really powerful stuff. It was a doctor who sees the results of the gun violence firsthand. And the final chapter of the book is called Now. In this chapter, author David Kennedy gives us his careful thoughts on where we have come with the focused deterrence and the focused deterrence strategy, which is a primary ingredient, and where he hopes it takes the communities and especially Peoria to the future. Then he summarizes what he's learned about violence in cities and details some of the reasons the strategies has not worked in certain places, but why it has worked in others. And I guess instead of me describing, maybe David, bring him into the conversation, and he can tell us in his own words in a second. You know, before we do, I'd like to make one point about the final chapter of the book. It struck me as really sad, extremely sad, that for the first time, we may have the solution to gun violence in Peoria and other communities. And for whatever reason, we may not be using it. We may be looking other places. None of us can look into the future and guarantee success, but I think what we've done is we can is do our best, and if this strategy is given our best, you know, then as Carl Cannon said in one of our previous programs, you know, we need to, shame on us if we don't try. We need to try to make it work.
Thanks, Sheriff. And maybe just for clarification there, the Sheriff talked about the call-in portion of this, and you know, I don't know if Jim or Jerry, one of you guys, want to just explain for the audience that might be hearing this part of it for the first time, and David's going to talk and expand on it a little bit more here too, but just the call-in part of that the Sheriff alluded to?
Yeah, the call-in is a concept, and as David had mentioned earlier, it comes subsequent to the arrest of individuals, and we've focused on individuals, and we're well aware of the criminals and the most dangerous criminals and those that are committing the crimes, and after apprehension of those comes the call-in. And the call-in is a meeting where there are individuals, there are many that are on either probation or parole that are members of these groups, and they're identified. And we bring in a representative from each group and try to bring in all the groups. And then in that group meeting, there's a message sent to them that this gun violence will not be tolerated. It simply must stop. And it's not a request. It is a statement that in our civilized society, in our community, we don't have to tolerate people shooting each other, and it won't be tolerated. And that's the message. And along those, the message, you have the families of victims, you have the moral community, whether it be, and I think David calls them the influencers, the family of victims, a mother, grandmother who is the victim of having one of their children or grandchildren murdered. The influencer in the moral community, whether it be a pastor, a minister, someone that has the influence over that individual, possibly an ex-offender. And the message is sent that this gun violence will not be tolerated. We'll be right back.
Well, this is the portion of the show where we turn to our national guests, and we're very excited and very happy that we actually have the opportunity to talk to our guest in studio this week, and he's also in town for a few days, which is huge for us in Peoria, and I think it adds extra emphasis to everyone in Peoria that this is a very good opportunity that we have to engage in the fact that the author has made time to come to Peoria and help us, help educate us and help talk us through this is very exciting. So David Kennedy is the director of the Center for Crime Prevention and Control. He's a professor of criminal justice at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. He's the co-chair of the National Network for Safe Communities, and he's also the author of the book that we've been spending a lot of time on, Don't Shoot, One Man, A Street Fellowship, and the End of Violence in Inner City America. And David, we're really glad to have you here. Thanks a lot for coming. And we're going to go right into some good discussion led by our U.S. Attorney, Jim Lewis.
David, warm welcome to Peoria.
Thanks.
And a warm welcome to the studios of WCBU. Jerry Brady and I have a series of questions, but we're looking forward to having a dialogue. And I certainly hope the people out there are reading this book because it's an important book. You write in your book that you can explain focused deterrence in 10 minutes. Any chance you can give us an even shorter version?
Yeah, absolutely. I say a lot that this is stupid, simple stuff, and it really is. Once you get a handle on some of the key facts and some of the key developments that have been proved out over the last 20 years, it all comes together, and it actually is dramatically simpler than we usually make it. And it works like this. The violence that we're all devoted to doing something about is vanishingly rare, thank God, even in the most dangerous places. Hardly any disputes go to gun violence. Hardly anybody will pull a trigger on you. And the root of the violence, the core of the violence, is small groups of very high rate offenders. These are, call them gangs or drug crews or sets or neighborhood networks or whatever you want to call them. They will produce 70-80% of the homicides, most of the shootings, and even in the most dangerous neighborhoods, hardly anybody is in one of these groups. It's going to be 5% or less of the young men, even in the most dangerous neighborhoods. And these are people whose names we can learn. They stand out. They don't operate undercover. They're not hiding. They are very evident. And this group has been using the term focused deterrence a lot. And the point is we can focus on them. We can focus law enforcement, but we can also focus community pressure. We can focus social services. We can identify them and engage with them in a very special way. And we've been talking about these call-ins. Call-ins are just a way of talking to the 5%. There's nothing magic about the call-in. But in the call-in and in various other ways, what turns out to work is to identify that 5%, to put together a partnership of law enforcement and community figures and social service providers, and say repeatedly and consistently some very simple things. They need to understand that their own community rejects the violence and desperately needs it to stop. And you find, if you spend time in these neighborhoods, people on the outside sometimes say they don't care. It's normal. They do care. It's not normal. Nobody wants their kids to get killed. Nobody. And when people who have standing in the eyes of the 5% say, we can't have this, they pay attention. We need to say to them, we care about you and we would like to help you. So we will meet you where you are. We will help you with going back to school and getting a job and emergency assistance and housing and drug treatment if you need it. This is a very needy population, and if they will take the help that we can offer them, we have a moral obligation to give it to them. And as has been said earlier today, this is not a negotiation. This is not a deal. It is going to stop. And so the last thing they need to understand is that where the violence continues, law enforcement will follow the violence back to the group that has produced it and make that group a special project. There's been a police shooting in the city not too long ago. I know nothing about that shooting, but what I know, because this is the way it works, is that everybody in law enforcement is making the shooter and the group from which that shooter came a special project. That's what happens when you shoot a cop. We can make that happen for everybody in the community. We can say to even people we label as offenders, shooting you is like shooting a cop. If somebody takes a shot at you, we will give that our top priority. We will not stop with the shooter. We will go after the entire drug crew from which the shooter comes. And when the streets understand these things, the community standard is no more. There's help for you if you want it. And if you don't listen and you pull a trigger, you go to the top of the list, and we will never stop until we've chewed through that group. They stop.
David, last week we talked Ed McGarrell from Michigan State and Rob Lang from High Point, North Carolina. They shared their thoughts with us on what makes the strategy. In other words, what we've talked about, the strategy and implementation, work in some places and not work in others. And I'm sure in your experience you've seen where it has worked, obviously, and you've seen some circumstances where it's failed. Can you give us your thoughts on that same topic, why it's successful in some places and why it has not been successful in other places?
Yeah, I loved hearing Ed talk about that because Ed is an academic. Academics are very, very careful about the kind of claims they make about what happens in the world. And to hear Ed say what he did, which is we haven't seen this fail anywhere it's been done properly, but we've seen it not done properly in a lot of places. And there are a couple of things. This is a very particular approach that's been developed for a very particular problem. It will not deal with all the crime ills in the neighborhood. There are other things we can do about that. But in the neighborhoods I work in, the killing is overwhelmingly the most important issue, and this is surgically directed at that. It has these core elements. You have to talk to the streets. You have to organize these community voices. You have to have the social service structure, and you have to keep all those promises. If somebody wants help, you have to deliver it. If somebody shoots somebody, you've got to take the follow-up enforcement action.
Yeah, I think that's an important. It seems in reading your book that the message has to be kept. Whether you say that there will be focus on individuals for the consequence of their behavior, you must keep that message. And likewise, if you suggest that there will be services, you must keep that message.
All of the above. And one of the things that you come to understand about the young men mostly who make it into this core 5%, this superheated street scene, is that one of the reasons they've made their way there is because over their entire lives, everybody has lied to them. They have been offered help and it hasn't come through. They have been told, next time, young man, we're really going to throw the book at you, and that hasn't happened. It is as if we had taught them not to pay attention to us. And part of getting their attention is not saying anything you don't mean and never writing a check you can't cash. And what we see a lot of cities do is veer off in one direction or another. They will try to make it all about social services, and that doesn't work by itself. They'll try to make it all about enforcement, and that doesn't work by itself. They'll let the kind of backbone of the work dissipate, so the promises are made and they're never kept. And predictably, if you do any of those things, you don't get the results that you want.
This is Jim again. Let me. I think we have the ingredients here to get it started. And I noticed in the book it starts so well in many places. How do you keep it going? How do you sustain it? How do you keep it working?
So, for a while, I've had an answer to that, and I'll give that to you in a minute. But there's a kind of new answer that's coming along, which makes all of us involved in this tremendously optimistic. And the new thing that we're seeing all over the country is that the community itself is demanding that this happen. So I'm working in places where neighborhood organizations and faith-based groups and such are going to the powers that are in the city and saying, we've done our homework. These are our neighborhoods. These are our people. We insist that this happen. And they're getting the usual sort of civic response, and people say, well, that's very nice. We have some ideas of our own. We'll get back to you. And the neighborhood folks are saying, we don't think you heard what we said. There isn't anything else like this, and these are our lives at stake. You don't get to play around with this anymore. You have an obligation to do this. And people are responding to that all over the country. What's happened here is a different version of the same thing. People who are in positions of responsibility did their homework and did their due diligence and have come to something unprecedented nationally, which is this long, careful process to put the moving parts in place and to do that in a context of overwhelming public commitment to getting it started and keeping it going. And that's the most important thing. On top of that, you need some professional administration. You need accountability mechanisms. You need the right kind of working relationships amongst the key parties. The cities we see being successful have the law enforcement agencies, the community groups, the social service providers. They close the door and get around a table, same time, same place, every 2 weeks, and they look around the city and see what's going on. They have their script about how they're going to respond to that, and the decisions are made in that room about what's going to happen. You need the tracking mechanisms to make sure you're getting the outcomes you want. You know, and I'm devolving into the minutiae of program administration. But the most important thing is for the city to say, we have a problem. What we have been doing is not working. We are going to do this, and we're going to do it right. And where people are serious about that, they're pretty sure of success.
David, I've read the book, and I've got, I think, some basic understanding, both from reading the book as well as from talking to you, of the strategy. But to me, one of the hardest parts is building the moral voice of the community. Can you give me a little bit of background and insight in selecting the moral voice of the community, the group, and the work they need to do to implement the strategy you've developed?
And I'm going to beat up on you a little bit because you've given me an opportunity. I'm not one to let those things go by. So you said build up the moral voice. And that's the way we think about this a lot, that there is somehow a lack of moral standing, a lack of moral standard in these neighborhoods, and we need to do something about that. And, in fact, that's not right. Just to say it again, the idea that people living in dangerous conditions, in dangerous neighborhoods, are okay with what's going on is as wrong as anything can be. The folks who can engage with the 5% and say, this is wrong, there's no excuse for it, we need it to stop, they are there. We don't necessarily recognize them. We often go to the wrong sort of people when we're looking for this. We often ask the question, who represents this issue in the community? And there may be people who fit that bill. The question we should be asking is, who will the 5% listen to? What we need is the activist, engaged partnership of people the 5% already respect. And happily, the neighborhoods are full of those people, gangbangers and drug dealers and whatever we want to call them. They will listen to their mothers. They will listen to their fathers. They will listen to their grandparents. They will listen to the elder on the block they grew up with. They will listen to the mothers of murdered children. They will listen to the older, wiser gangbangers that they looked up to when they were young, who are now 10 years older and they've learned their lesson and they can speak to the hollowness of all this like nobody else. The neighborhoods are full of people who have standing on these issues. And really all we need to do is get out of the way and respect their role in these neighborhoods and help broker the safe places where they can say what needs to be said. That's all we need to do.
You know, David, if I can, and this is, I understand what you're saying, and I think a lot of the listeners are talking to themselves saying, who is it that's going to directly communicate with the people that are using the guns? And you've explained that the people that are going to talk to them are people they already respect in the community.
Right.
You know, so what does that mean for me? So why am I reading the book? So why is this listening audience listening to the book? I think it's an important piece for people to understand, and people that are listening to this show who don't have that direct connection. What do we need from them? Because everybody's got a part to play in this.
They do, and a lot of it is actually pretty simple and straightforward. So, you know, let's talk about education instead of gun violence. We want to live in a city where even if your own kid isn't in high school, you are part of setting a community standard that says in this place people finish school, they prepare themselves to go to work, they prepare themselves to be in a position to raise their families. In a strange kind of way, we've lost that community norm around violence. We have these conversations where we say, how do we get people in other neighborhoods to care about this? Well, everybody should care about this. And whether their own kids are at risk, it shouldn't matter. We should be saying in an unmistakable community voice, not here, no more, this doesn't happen. And those community standards are enormously powerful. When that is the norm in any place, you don't have to make people behave at the point of a gun. Right, you people do what they do because they know that that's the right thing. I get into this with law enforcement people all the time because they have a horrible time understanding this. They really don't believe in this kind of soft power. And I'll say to them, so when you were growing up, were you really afraid of the police? And in a room full of 100 narcotics cops, maybe 4 or 5 people will raise their hand. And I'll say, thanks very much. Now, when you were growing up, who was really afraid of your mother? Mm-hmm. And everybody raises their hand because we all care more about our mothers and our neighbors and our girlfriends and our friends than we do about the cops. That's just the way it works. So a healthy city runs on community norms and standards and expectations and obligations. And only when those things fail do we want to go to law enforcement. So even if somebody in another neighborhood doesn't give a dollar or mentor a kid or go to a civic association or any of the concrete things that they can do, part of what's happening with this process that you've put in motion is that you are surfacing what ought to be live and vital every single day, which is this is not a place where people shoot each other.
It's Jim again. In Peoria, this is being aimed as towards a reduction in violence. And you can look at that by seeing homicides, by seeing the number of people that show up with gunshot wounds
Yep.
in hospitals and things like that. Are there other non-statistical ways that we will know that this is or is not working?
Absolutely. And the one that I've got to say means the most to me, and it happens every single time when you get these changes in the neighborhoods, is people say, we're going outside again. Right? Part of the tragedy of this is that people are literally prisoners in their homes. They're afraid to go to school. School attendance goes up. They're afraid to use public spaces, and they take the parks back from the guys who've been using them for business. Girls will say, I'm not afraid to go to the store anymore. One of the things that goes on in these places is that the crews and such, they seem inevitably to gather around the little convenience stores and the grocery stores. And if you want a bottle of milk, you've got to kind of run the gauntlet to come and go. And people don't like to do that. So there's this marvelous moment when you literally see people going outside and they're mowing their lawn and they're gardening and they're using the playgrounds. And then with that comes all the things that the violence has turned in the other direction. It makes sense for people to invest in their property because their equity is going to mean something. The absentee landlords start actually taking care of the properties that they've let fall apart. Businesses will decide that it actually makes sense to locate in these areas. One of my community partners says he always asks, will the pizza people deliver? And places that you couldn't get a delivery person into start doing their job again. It's simple and it's profound.
David, in Cincinnati, the strategy worked early on, and then you hit a rough spot, and the violence came back and started to return. Could you talk just a little bit about what you did in response to that? In other words, once it's been quelled, if it returns, how do you manage that?
Well, what happened in Cincinnati and the Cincinnati chapter, which is at the end of Don't Shoot, is there for a very particular reason, because there's a long history of cities making this work and getting these extraordinary results, and then for what are now pretty predictable reasons, it has all gone away. It can be a personality conflict inside an agency. Somebody doesn't like somebody else, and so their project gets derailed. It can be friction between agencies. As we've talked about, one piece of this can end up taking over the entire stage, and the law enforcement work gets done, but the community work doesn't, or vice versa. It can go anyway. But we've seen this over and over and over and over again. And what was almost magical from our point of view about what happened in Cincinnati is that when this started to happen, the city stepped in and fixed it. So we have been saying to cities for years now, the city needs to own this. It can't be any one agency. It can't be any one person. You need this partnership. And there needs to be a kind of structure at the city level that when these rather predictable missteps happen, there's a mechanism to recognize them and fix them. And Cincinnati did that and brought things back on track.
David, we had an earlier show, and Ted Heinrich from Boston talked about the early days when nobody believed in this strategy. Just sort of on a personal feeling, how do you feel about having designed something that may be such a successful answer to violent crime, which plagues all of our cities?
That's an interesting question. I don't think like that, and I'm not being modest or polite, and I'm not necessarily proud of what I'm saying here. A lot of us who've been involved in this really only see what is still to be done. And there's one way of saying, tremendous things have been accomplished, and that's right. But it's also true that while we've been figuring this out, the kind of culture of violence that drives this stuff on the street has been moving around the country. I work in lots of very small places now that 10 and 15 years ago, if you'd said to them, you're going to be dealing with Chicago-style violence in your neighborhoods, they would not have believed it for a second, and now they are. The most recent national data that we have says that while serious violence has been steadily declining overall across the country, among black men, and especially among black men in smaller and medium-sized cities, it's actually getting substantially worse. So nobody on my side of things is particularly proud of where we are. What we do think is that the basic direction about what's needed to be done in order to address this has now been identified. But if we can't translate that collectively into action in the right places, then we haven't done anything.
David, where do you go from here? We understand from Rob Lang in the last conversation that you're working in High Point using focused deterrence against domestic violence.
Yeah, that's right.
In other words, and if you would, you know, some people think that, you know, this violence, how does it compare to domestic violence in the families? And
well, High Point is a city about Peoria's size, and 10 years ago had the kind of violence that Peoria is dealing with now. It's now somewhat bigger than Peoria, and its violence is dramatically, dramatically reduced. And one of the things that High Point's demonstrated is that each time they take a big step and make sure that they can keep that ground, they look at the next important source of the violence. So we began with the groups and the gangs. They corralled that. They had open-air drug markets all over the city. We came up with something that fixed that. You got rid of the drugs, but it got rid of the chaos associated with the public markets. They moved on from that to robbery, and we have moved on from that to domestic violence. And what we know about everything up to the domestic violence piece is that it all worked. We're in the early stages of the domestic violence intervention, and we don't know yet for sure whether it's working. We've got our fingers crossed because it looks pretty promising at this point. But it's this focus and the deployment of the focused community, the focused social services, the focused law enforcement, that looks to be a fairly winning recipe that you can figure out how to apply to a bunch of different particulars.
David, as we're coming to the end of the show, which I really wish we had a couple hours tonight, because I'm fascinated by your perspective on this, and I find it extremely valuable and interesting. But if you could give a 1 minute takeaway to the listening audience before we draw this down, what would you want to tell the folks in Peoria that have been reading your book?
I actually guess I would go back to the reason I sat down a couple of years ago to try to write Don't Shoot, which was really just two things. Right? The whole book basically only makes two points. And one is that the violence and the other things that come with the violence. So I am as focused now on the fact that we're arresting all the men in these neighborhoods in order to prevent the violence and ruining them and their families and their community forever, as we are on the violence itself. So that set of problems, the violence, the mass incarceration, the poisoned relationships between these neighborhoods and the police, it's way worse than nearly everybody understands, and we should not and cannot stand for it. And the second is that as imperfect as they are, when I got into this 20, 25 years ago, there wasn't anything that worked on this problem, and now there is. And people need to understand that. They need to understand what they need to do to do it in their own backyards. And they need to understand that if they do it reasonably well, it will help a lot. And that's where I began, and really that's where I come back to.
So, David, you've been here for the better part of a day and a half now, and I know that that Tate and Jim have provided you with some information before you got here, but as long as you've been involved with this and as much as you've seen, what's your assessment of Peoria and not only where we are, but where you see this going?
Well, there's nothing but good news. So I am not a polite person, and I don't say stuff like that if I don't mean it. So the thing that no other city has ever experienced is the folks representing the capacities and responsibilities that you do around this table, having collectively said, we're going to do this, we're going to do it right, we're going to take responsibility for it, and we are going to drive this process. The whole Peoria Reads engagement with the book is an aspect of that, but it is literally unprecedented. So what has happened, as far as I see it right now, is that the stage has been set, both publicly and in your working relationships and in your working relationships with others you've engaged on this, to do it right. And that stage is unlike anything else anybody has ever done anywhere. Now there's a lot of work to do. Right, so public commitment doesn't translate into the nuts and bolts of the operation that we need to field in Peoria, and that won't happen by itself. But this is the piece you have created is the piece I worry about. I can, and others around the country can, help any city that wants to do this with the nuts and bolts. What we worry about is the civic commitment, the institutionalization, the sustainability, and that's the piece you've been working on. So into that, we now need to move the following pieces. We tell every city now, don't even start unless you're going to bring in somebody very experienced and responsible to manage this across agencies and communities and service providers as a sole full-time responsibility. It's really hard work. You can't give it to somebody who already has a full plate. It will not survive. So we've learned that the hard way. So you want to find that person and bring them on. We need to do the relatively simple work that needs to be done afresh in any place, to identify these street groups and core individuals that I keep talking about. Almost no jurisdiction routinely audits itself for these folks in this clear way, so we need to do that. We need to get the working parties together. So we recommend to any city that even folks like this move into operational mode and close the door and get your peers together and same time, same place every 2 weeks for an hour to say what is going on in the city, where is the violence, who's behind it, what are we doing, are we keeping the promises we've made. It won't always go well. It just doesn't work like that. And somebody needs to say, we're a little bit adrift here, we're going to fix this. In order to even get started, you need to identify the core figures who will represent the community moral voice in your engagement with the street population. You need to get the social services organized so you can say, if you want out, here's the number that you call, and when that number is called, this whole support structure kicks into action. And as effective as all this can be, it is never perfect. And unfortunately, there are going to be people who do not listen. There are going to be people who do pull triggers. And the combined law enforcement community needs to be ready to register that, to act on it, to make it a priority. I can't tell you how many places this has fallen apart because people issue these promises. And when it comes down to actually doing the work, the same guys who are supposed to be doing this are also told to go stand around on corners downtown and make sure that no white folks get robbed. And you can't do everything. You've got to do this. It's what's going to get you the return. And you are at the point where those operational steps are very clearly defined, and you need to do them and do them right.
Well, I certainly think that really puts a lot on our plate. and I think one of the things that we opened with, and maybe it's a good thing to start to close with, is
especially for the people that have been participating in the show and reading the book, is we're literally at the very beginning of this. It's a long road. We've done some work, but we have a long way to go. Every one of us has to look inside and make that commitment to this program and to follow through on it. It's been successful in a lot of communities, but we as a community have got to focus in on this and make the commitment to see it go forward and be successful.
So let me add something there, which is I see tiger traps everywhere, right? So I worry about what's going to go wrong always. It's also true that you can do this, you can do it well, you can do it pretty briskly, and you can be seeing results on the ground, meaning real changes in the violence in the neighborhoods, easily in 3 or 4 or 6 months. You can put it together that quickly, and one of the beauties of this approach is that when those messages go out and they're heeded, things change really fast. So there's a lot of work to do, but it's doable work.
You know, when I got sworn in as the United States Attorney, one of the first things that I was aware of was the violence in early 2010 in Peoria. But then I immediately learned that you have partners here who will get to work on it. All of the police agencies helped the police department at that point in time. I learned you had the leadership in the police department. You have the leadership in the sheriff's office. You've got the strength in your state's attorney's office. So the ingredients, they're here, and I'm excited, but we're also, in many ways, as you said, we're at the beginning. I very much appreciate the chance to have been on these programs, and I'm looking forward to the idea that our office is going to help you and help you all in any way. There are tiger traps. There are problems, but this is a group of people that work together, and we're going to get through all those things. And we're going to have a different community. When I got sworn in, I said something that David would probably, you know, appreciate. I said, I want to see a community where children can play outside and parents can sleep at night.
Yep.
And I think we're going to improve that.
And let me add to that, and I won't put words in your mouth, but I've learned how important this next piece is, that when they come home from playing outside, both their parents are in the community because we figured out a way to make them safe without locking them up.
Mm-hmm. And I happen to agree on that one as well. Thank you.
Yeah, Jim, well put. And you know, I'm optimistic, and I'll tell you why I'm optimistic. Because first, everybody, as you've mentioned, and it's been apparent in the short time you've been here, the people around this table seem to all get along and recognize, and they have a genuine interest in this community and what's good for this community. And we understand, and this is, I think, the real benefit that gives me the optimism. We understand the component parts, because as you've described them, they are somewhat simple. It's pretty basic logic. And so understanding that and the people that are involved, put those two together, and I think we can go forward, and I think we can be successful. And I think, you know, you had mentioned also one of the byproducts of this reduction in violence is we see other areas develop, education, economic development. And you know what? We have a better community in which to live.
Yep.
And that's what we're all after.
Yep.
So I thank you for your input and coming to Peoria.
Thanks.
For our listeners, I can tell the group and our listeners, you know, we're going all in. That, you know, this, we're not viewing this as just a new program we're going to add on to all the other things we do. This is not a click-it-or-ticket campaign that's going to be 3 weekends throughout a summer and then we move on. This, we want to inculcate this into the culture of our department. And one of the things that David Kennedy suggested to us, you know, I asked him, how do we learn to get this, how do we take this to the ground level? How do we make this actually work within the police department? And he suggested that we partner up with an agency that's already had success, and he suggested High Point, and based on the similarities they have with Peoria and their record of success. So when I leave this recording today, we're going to be working on scheduling a trip, and I want to copy what they're doing and bring it back home. You know, my staff is excited. It's a game plan, and we're ready to follow a game plan, and it's going to be long term, and we're going to stick with it.
Well, as a sheriff, obviously the differences that we have with the city are not as different as a lot of people think. We share the same concerns for the community. And I think that people need to know that the groundwork's been done. We're not going to tolerate the violence. We've got a game plan to go forward. The jail's full. The object is to get the right people in and the right people out. And the people that are here and the people that we've talked to in the community that have got on board have dedicated themselves along with this group to see that this happens. I think David coming to town has just solidified in my mind that we're on the right track. I think that we're doing things the right way under your direction, Mr. Mayor, and I think that the community is going to step up, and I see in the next 6 months there's going to be huge, huge changes in this community, and I'm excited.
Well, this has been all 4 weeks of this discussion has been very educational. I think we all learned a lot of about the subject, but today has certainly been an outstanding way to end the discussion, especially having David Kennedy in the studio with us today. And as we bring this to a close, I feel kind of sad, actually. It's been a quick 4 weeks. It's been a very good opportunity for us. It would not have been possible without our friends here at WCBU, who have allowed us a lot of time on the air to have this important community discussion. We'd also like to thank the Peoria Public Library and Commonplace for sponsoring Peoria Reads Don't Shoot. And our panelists who have, throughout the 4 weeks, our U.S. Attorney Jim Lewis, our State's Attorney Jerry Brady, Sheriff Mike McCoy, and Police Chief Steve Settingsgaard. The folks down at Samantle who put all the marketing together have done an outstanding job. We would like to encourage everybody again, if you haven't been there, go to don'tshootpeoria.com. All the leaders in the community who have participated in this, we thank them all. We're really appreciate the fact that everybody's read the book, joining in the discussion on how we can work together to make Peoria a less violent place, a place that we're all proud of, a place that we are proud to stand up and call Peoria our home. And this month has only been the start of our efforts to make Peoria a better place to live, a better place to work, a better place to raise our families. So we all acknowledge that we have a lot of hard work to do, the police, the prosecutors, the community, the media, and the faith-based community too. We all have a role to play to make Peoria a better place. I ask everybody listening to this, figure out what it is that is your place to play in this Don't Shoot project. What is it that you can do to help make this successful? You know what it is. I don't know what it is. So figure out what that is and participate to make this a success. I'm Peoria Mayor Jim Artis. We'd like to thank everyone. For anybody listening to this on Thursday as we close, David Kennedy is going to be at the Michael Student Center this afternoon, Thursday at 6 o'clock for a community forum. We would love to invite you to come and meet David in person and hear about what he has to say. That's Thursday, 6 o'clock at the Michael Student Center. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Peoria Reads Don't Shoot Roundtable series on WCBU. Peoria Mayor Jim Artis, Peoria County State's Attorney Jerry Brady, U.S. Attorney Jim Lewis, Peoria County Sheriff Mike McCoy, and Peoria Police Chief Steve Settingsgaard have been our panelists for the series. The show was produced by WCBU's Nathan Irwin and Assistant U.S. Attorney Tate Chambers. Additional assistance for the series came from WCBU's Daryl Scott and Tom Hunt. I'm Tanya Kuntz. This Don't Shoot Peoria Reads Roundtable show airs again Sunday at 3 o'clock here on 89.9 Peoria Public Radio, and the entire four-show series can be found on our website, wcbufm.org.